It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are in here on this sort of, what would you call it? Too darn hot Saturday morning. How's that?
That is accurate. It is brutally hot, and it was yesterday as well.
Yeah. When you don't even feel like, could argue with yourself, you'd kind of like to go fishing or something.
No way.
You walk outside, say, turn around and go back. Crack a cold beer and turn on a whatever
or
on the
TV. Go jump in the pool.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan too. Man, it's been hot. I have not been the one complaining this year, but I changed that yesterday. So I started getting into my complaining mode.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's not hot in here.
I knew our mild summer last year would come back and haunt us, and here it is.
Yep. Anyway, all the better for those of you sitting around in air-conditioned cars or in your homes on the internet or whatever, even on the radio, listening to the show. Try to stick around for the hour. Thanks to all of the regulars for always being here. And if you're new to the show, as I always say, whether someone told you about it, if you just left your radio on the channel, stick around. There's always something to be learned in an hour. And there is always a lot going on these days, it seems. This week was absolutely no different than any of the other ones. Things happening all over the place. And there's some observations and still the big old dilemma. What in the heck is going on with this economy?
I don't know.
It's unbelievably complicated.
It really is. It's the toughest situation to unpack that I've ever seen, because whatever picture you want to paint, you can paint it, and it's pretty easy to pick out the statistics to support whatever theory
easily
that you have. Yep. And I've never seen it as wildly divergent as this, where you've got every leading indicator saying, screaming that we're going into recession.
15 months, is it, in a row? They've been down?
Yeah, there's just no, you can't.
That means you're going into a recession.
Right. And
period.
Not just a little one, like a big recession.
A screaming recession.
But if you look around and throw the data away, there's nowhere that really looks like that right now that we can find. I mean, you've got people employed. People are spending money like crazy. The home builders are going nuts.
Luxuries are out there. Go to a restaurant. Everybody's out.
Everyone's employed. Who wants to be employed?
Yeah.
I don't. It's just really, really tough to decipher.
Got an inverted yield curve that says recession. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's as weird as I've seen it, and it's all. You can directly trace this all back to COVID and the amount of money that we printed and all and gave away and the things that were done in the name of COVID have caused all of this. And it really, I hate this word, but it's unprecedented, because we've never done that before. We've never shut down the economy and then reopened and plowed money into the economy, given checks to people for doing nothing. And it's just a really unusual situation.
I remember very few years ago, Bill Barr was given a press conference. He said something that the other side didn't like very much, and he said it was unprecedented. And one of the young female liberal reporters said, wasn't that kind of a harsh word? And he said, well, can you tell me another instance where that same thing happened? He thought about it. Said, no. He said, well, I think that's the definition of the word. And that's how I feel right now about this economy. There's no time in my knowledge, either on Earth or reading about it, where this many things were so in disharmony, I guess. Yeah, I mean, you could put me on a debate team, just give me a side, and I'll argue the heck out of it.
Yeah, and I don't like the word, because it gets used too much,
right,
about things that are routine. Maybe you just forgot about the last time it happened, but it did. But this really has never happened
before.
This
really is new. Yeah.
It was kind of a mixed week for stocks, but overall pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Dow was up 2.1%, the S&P 0.7%, but the NASDAQ actually lost 0.6%. And I'm really curious if the upcoming rebalance of the QQQ and the cheaper cousin QQQM ETFs have anything to do with that. And The reason I say that is, if you don't know, QQQ is one of the largest ETFs in the world. It trails only maybe SPY, and I don't even know if there's any others that it is behind, but it's not many.
I'm not sure. If there is, I'm not aware of it.
It's probably in the top 10 largest.
Oh, it's definitely that.
And it's owned by a company called Invesco, and they have a rule for this ETF that no single company can make up more than 14% of the index, or they can match the weight of the fifth largest company in the index as well. Right. And you cannot have the five largest securities be more than 38.5% of the total holdings of the ETF.
Well, guess what happened?
Yeah, so under 14%, that's fine. There's no other companies that make up more than 4.4% of the index outside the top five. There's one that's right at 4.4, the sixth largest, which I think was, I can't remember, Microsoft maybe? No, Google. It was Google.
Microsoft is really on fire.
Yeah, and so the five largest right now are Microsoft, Apple, NVIDIA, and Amazon, and Tesla. So you've got those five making up currently 46% of the index. That's a pretty clearly exceeds 38.5%. This reshuffle that they're going to do will take weight away from those five. So you can kind of look at that as a positive or a negative. So the reason the ETF has done so well, it's up over 40% this year, is those five companies have done extremely well. Some of them are up more than 100% this year. And so then if you take away from those, that could affect the performance of the ETF going forward. But I actually would take the other side of that argument and say that that reshuffling these is kind of like rebalancing your portfolio. You sell the things that are high and you buy things that are low. So I think overall it's a good thing, but I do think that that's a lot of shares of those five stocks to sell because this is such a large ETF. So the negative performance that you saw in the NASDAQ, particularly on Thursday and Friday, I'm curious if part of it had to do with that.
Yeah, and I think you'll see some basic price lowering on the big ones. And what that'll do is reduce their valuations and cause another spurt of buying.
So yeah, yeah, that's true.
My reaction to this would be ho-hum.
Yeah, it was curious that the NASDAQ start turned lower when this announcement came out.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
Oh, and I can see why. Anytime something sounds like there's uncertainty coming, the market will always sell off on that.
Yeah, yeah. And this is that I don't think it'll have a large, long-reaching effect on anything. No. So
it might be a reasonably large shock on one day, but long run it means nothing except getting a little wind behind you and blowing up again. These guys are doing, the companies are doing well. At the bottom of all this is people are doing really well out there.
Yeah, that is true, especially anything related to AI and that those five companies.
Well, plus look at all the layoffs they had. Their cost structures have to be in the best shape they've been in decades.
Yeah, I'm not sure all of those companies did layoffs, but at least half of them, I believe, did layoffs. And so, yeah, they could be in really good shape. In fact, you can see it in the projected earnings numbers started to turn up again. So they've been coming down for a few quarters, and now the projections are starting to trend up again.
That's another one of those confusing signs.
Mm-hmm.
that says there's no recession coming.
Right.
I don't get it. When is the interest rate environment going to go back to normal? That's a question I'd like to have answered.
What normal meaning, not inverted?
A regular yield curve, and we don't really know.
Don't know.
TINA went away. That stood for over the past long time. There is no alternative because interest rates were so low. Well, now there are alternatives, and how that's going to affect the bond market in the short run, I'm not sure. But lots of confusion. All right, we'll pay some bills and be right back. Don't go anywhere, especially if you're born in 51. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do, as usual, have a trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Well, the S&P 500, the broad market indicator that most of us prefer, it's not as much fun as the others, but it's a lot more representative of what's going on. It has now officially gone from the bear market into a bull market, past 20% quite a while ago. And in fact, it's more than 27% higher than its last low. Now, in order to get to the average bull market cycle, how much further will it have to go in terms of percentage? So what percentage increase would the S&P 500 have to experience just to get to the average of bull markets over time? It's a, we'll just take it as a whole number, and it's, I'm going to give you a big hint here. It's more than two.
Okay.
You like that?
Yeah.
All right. That's it. All right. Do you want to wrap up anything else on this?
Yeah, I had a few other things. The NASDAQ has been on fire this year, in case you didn't notice. But the Dow has really actually struggled to stay positive for the year until the last few weeks. With the recent outperformance of the Dow, it's now up 6.3% this year, which is well below the 18.1% on the S&P and 34.1% on the NASDAQ. But it's good to see rotation back into non-AI related stocks. And you're seeing that with the Dow. You're seeing that with small caps and mid caps. They've had a good month. They're up around 3-4%. And the best performing sectors this month have been financials, utilities, and energy, which are three of the worst performing sectors this year. In fact, there's only two sectors that are negative in 2023. That's utilities and energy. And they both have had two of the best months. So that's really encouraging.
Yeah.
The number of stocks trading above their 50-day moving averages just reached 80% for the first time all year, another positive sign for the breadth of the market.
Yep. If you are an index-oriented investor like the SPY and the DIA and on and on, you really want to see a broad market increase, and we're in it right now. Now, why? Really just not that sure.
Yeah.
This thing has been so confusing on the economy.
One thing that's not confusing is China.
That's pretty loud and clear.
I believe I used the word uninvestable a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. and apparently their politicians realized that as well. They just came out this week and said that they are facing a quote-unquote extremely severe situation in the second half of 2023. But they did give the reason for it, and it's mean other countries like the U.S. that are not treating them fairly. They didn't say that, but what they said was it's political, not economic. And they, so they're saying that the second half of this year is going to be absolutely terrible for China. Their markets reacted accordingly. China's overall market dropped about 2.5%, and Chinese tech stocks dropped closer to 5% just this week. Emerging markets were down 1.7%, but the ETF that we use, because we sort of predicted this was coming, it excludes China. It was down just 0.6%. So if you own China, you may want to temporarily not own China. It might be a good buying point later this year, but I'm not buying it today.
One thing it does speak to from a domestic standpoint, in other words, our best interest, this is not boding well for the supply chain, as if they start getting really involved in the politics of what's going on over there, they can do things to us. We've got to just be getting out of there.
Actually, that was what they were. That's not necessarily the case, because what they were saying is that people are moving their supply chains out of China.
Yeah, exactly.
The Chinese were saying that, so they've admitted that it's become a problem for their manufacturing sector. Apparently, enough companies have done this to where it's really starting to show
up. Good for them.
Yeah.
I know India is a big recipient.
India, Mexico.
Vietnam.
Yep. A lot of other Southeast Asian countries.
In other words, non-Chinese low-cost producers.
Right. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing that's happened. But, you know, it's almost like their actions have consequences. They've been aligning themselves with Russia, North Korea, Cuba, mm-hmm. Venezuela, and they've been meddling in elections in Central America, and it's and they unleashed COVID on the world. It's, dude, I don't really have a lot of sympathy.
A lot?
Or any?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, maybe they'll find out that we're a little bit more important than they believe we should be. Whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, looking again, just before we wrap up the whole market thing, the ISM, the Manufacturing Supply Index, under 50 again, which says recession in manufacturing. And I had one other. Yeah. Oh, credit is tight. Loans aren't that easy to get, and defaults are rising.
Mm-hmm.
Recessionary indicators.
Yeah, for sure.
Where's it going? I read one, I guess you'd call it an intelligent piece, that said, what you're seeing is the aftermath of the recession that we already had, and they wouldn't let you call it that.
Right, maybe.
Which was the first two quarters last year, mm-hmm. which were both negative. But for some reason, that wasn't a recession, even though the definition of a recession is two consecutive quarters of negative growth. But it wasn't, because the Biden administration said it wasn't.
It's not, yeah.
And you know, if you say something often enough,
right.
it becomes the truth.
Right.
Well, we'll keep you posted, but every time I open my mouth to start saying I'm not predicting a recession, I hesitate. But I'm not right now predicting one.
Well, this year.
This year, yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, fun and games, huh?
Definitely.
All right. Born in 1951. If you're born before that, you got unlucky, as I did when they're talking about required minimum distributions from your retirement accounts. But if you're born in 1951, you're in a state of confusion, and the IRS knows that. So they just issued some help. Help is on the way. Because of the change from the required minimum distribution age from 72 to 73, and because that information was not finalized, formalized, and spread out, a lot of misinformation got out from pre-printed things toward the end of last year. And that did not factor in the 73. So the only year that's really affected by this is if you were born in 1951. But if so, the truth is you do not need to take a required minimum distribution in 2023. They just let everybody opt out of that. But what if you already did, thinking, I got to do it anyway? Well, here's the story. You have until, I believe they said October 15th now, that would be the due date of tax returns that were extended, to replace all that money, and it will be as if it never happened. Now, that date had already passed in theory, but the IRS just got lenient with people. So anyone who is turning 72 this year, meaning you were born in 1951, you can either not do it, or you can pay it back, but if you want to take it, do. And I want to also remind people that the qualified charitable deductions of the contributions from an IRA start at 70 and a half and always have. It is not related to the RMD date for your requirement. So even though you don't have to take money out, if you want to make your charitable contributions this year and you're under 73, as long as you're 70 and a half, and I mean 70 and a half, I mean, you can't do it the day before you're 70 and a half. You do it that day or later. But you can still do that, and it's as if it never happened. So you don't get hung up on that lack of deduction for the charitable contribution, because so many of us now use standard deduction. So if you got all that, just remember, if you're born in 51 and don't want to take an RMD, don't take it. If you already did, pay it back if you want to, and it never happened. So trying to keep your income down, that helps. And, of course, the people I'm talking about are affected by Medicare. And a lot of times when you take out that required minimum distribution, it can bump you up into a new IRMA bracket, meaning an additional income tax on what you make just to pay for the same Medicare that your neighbors get at a lower price. So there's all kinds of reasons to do it. If you got any questions, you can always call the show or call the office or email us or anything like that. But that's all brand new news, just released, and it's the truth now, finally. Ed Slott said it's the truth. It's the truth.
All right. Good deal.
All right.
I have something about the Fed that you may have heard of. It's called the FedNow system.
Mm-hmm.
It is a instant payment system. So this is a hot topic, but not for the reasons that it's intended to be a hot topic. This is simply a way that payments that the Fed can make banks' payments clear immediately, so there won't be holds on funds, which is something that should have gone away a long time ago, but the system hadn't been in place. So the Fed is implementing this, and there's 57 big banks that are part of it, names you'd recognize: JP Morgan, Bank of New York, Wells Fargo, et cetera, et cetera. And it is, it's basically something somewhat like PayPal, where if I send money, it's available for someone else immediately. Mm-hmm. This will be true when banks transfer money back and forth to each other. Now, a lot of people are going to look at this and say, uh-oh, this is like the beginning of the end for cash. No. This is not that.
No.
So do, but I've already, when I was Googling it, some stuff like that came up. Do not worry about this. This is something that simply a procedural system that should have been in place 20 years ago, but is just now getting implemented.
We all know the irritation received when you deposit a check or try to deposit
it's
a check into your bank.
It's the worst.
Well, we give you $500 today, and then a week from now, you get another $1,000.
Exactly.
That's all going to go away, and this is going to facilitate that going away. So ultimately, it's a good thing. So don't worry about it. All right, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. All kinds of good stuff on the other side. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And I remind everybody that, A, the lines are open, 904-222-8255. And, two, the trivia question remains out there. How much will the S&P 500 index have to rise from where it is today in order to just equal an average bull market run? And I'm going to sweeten the pot a little bit. I already told you it was a number higher than 2. I'm going to double that. It's even higher than 4.
Whoa.
That's a bracket thing.
Mm.
Well, would be if we had an upper number, I guess. Anyway, it's just a whole number more than 4. If you want to take a guess at it, I'll tell you that answer's probably not easy to find. So if anybody's out there doing some searches on the internet, that's fine. Let's see, Schwab, everybody who knows us well knows that our custodian is TD Ameritrade, and people who follow the markets understand that TD Ameritrade was sold to Schwab, and this is the year where the integration is actually happening, which is actually happening in, what, about 6 weeks?
Yeah, something it's just sneaking like up on us pretty quickly.
So I came across this article about Schwab's closing and downsizing offices in 10 cities, and I wanted to talk about it because it is not a sign of trouble. No one should be worried about dealing with Schwab. In fact, their stock price is on a tear, and everything is fine. But I want you to hear this, because there's something in here that probably isn't going to just pop right out of it. So they'll be closing offices on October 1st in Atlanta, San Antonio, San Diego, St. Louis, Tampa, and they're reducing sizes of offices in Boston, Henderson, that's in Nevada, Jersey City in New Jersey, and San Francisco, as well as 2 spots in Chicago. Anybody see a pattern there? There's a bunch of places that, given my druthers, I would rather not live. That would be Atlanta, San Antonio, San Diego, St. Louis, Tampa. And they're realizing that, well, actually since COVID, only a few of those offices are staffed above 50%, because a lot of people are working remotely. Bricks and mortar are expensive. Worse yet, it's really hard to get people to go to certain locations in places like San Francisco. What this means for Schwab is that they're getting smarter. Nothing else.
I was at the Schwab office yesterday at the town center, and it was hopping.
No kidding.
Yeah, there was a lot of people there.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they'll wind up in a place like this doing an expansion rather than the cutback. But if anybody gets concerned because they hear rumors like that, just don't worry about it. It's a wonderful company. We dealt with them for many, many years before going to TD, and now they're coming back home through the acquisition. All right, Adam will probably be really jealous of this, that I got a personal invitation to a retirement master class being held at a very swanky restaurant at lunch, isn't it? We're going to live, we're going to learn if we go and listen to them, apparently, how to live a tax-free retirement. And their question is that really possible? I wouldn't have to read anymore because I'll give you the answer. No. How's that?
This is a life insurance product for sure.
You got it. How your tax ruling 7702 could affect your retirement. But you didn't know you had a tax ruling 7702, huh?
I wasn't aware, and I do this for a living.
Well, you think that's some kind of thing where just because you're really cool or something, you don't have to pay taxes?
Maybe.
No, it's not. A 7702 defines what is an actual life insurance policy and what is a MAC, a modified endowment contract, or things like that. So you have to have, if you're going to use this system, you're going to have a 7702 ruling that has nothing with you. It has to do with the policy they're trying to sell you. So it has to qualify for that. The next thing we'll learn is the disadvantages of contributing to your 401k. I mean, let's face it, who would want to get a tax deduction for their contribution in the current year and let it grow until you're much older, tax deferred, until you have to take it out? Who would want to do that?
That sounds awful. Let's not do that.
No, I just can't imagine being stuck in a big vortex like that. How to eliminate market risk. Eliminate market risk. There's one way to do that. Don't invest in the market.
That is one way.
Yeah. And you know what you get then? Lesser returns over time than the market. If you want to keep up with and exceed inflation, you have to have exposure to the market. It's been proven numerically over many, many, many years. How to create guaranteed lifetime income. Gee, that's good. I'll tell you one way, paying to Social Security. That's a really good way because they'll pay for your lifetime. And how to grow your retirement funds tax-free and with tax-free distributions. Well, okay, we'll get back to that. How paying taxes now can be more beneficial to your future. So here goes the oldest assumption in all of the financial hustle. When you are older and withdrawing money from your 401k, you will pay taxes at a much higher rate than you pay now because I said so. But when do you remember taxes being higher or lower than now? They're kind of at a, what would you call it, a midpoint, sweet point right now. Taxes are, you know, on the high end of low and on the low end of high and all that, but
right now,
they're not going to kill you.
Right now, I'd say they're quite low, actually.
Yeah. Well, over the course of much history, yeah. Reagan took it from 78 to 28. Now we bump back up to 35.
Well, you're talking at the top end of the scale.
Overall. Exactly right. Thank you, Secure Act.
Yeah.
Most people's incomes and most people's retirement incomes and so on, you're not going to be subjected to 35, 40, 50, 60% rates. But these people will show you an illustration of why you just might. What they're doing here, and we've talked about this over and over, they're selling what they call fully funded life insurance products. You are to cash in all of your retirement savings and pay whatever in taxes, plus pay an additional Medicare if you're that age, put the money into these things, and as long as they're 7702 qualified, then you start borrowing money out tax-free, which is true. If you have a 7702 ruling on your policy, the money that comes out of there is not a taxable event to you. But what did you pay to get in there?
A lot in taxes.
And what is your rate of return in these policies?
Probably lower than inflation.
Yeah, probably. And do they always work? No. In fact, in some cases, the cost of the insurance, remember a life insurance policy, the first thing they do every year is they pay themselves for the life insurance part of it.
And as you get older, those policies become very expensive.
That's the best indexing you'll ever see financially, is what they charge you for insurance as you get older.
It can get in tens of thousands of dollars just for the life insurance portion.
Yeah. So if that policy, fully funded, meaning if you put in one more dollar, they declare it a MEC, and that's not a life insurance policy anymore. So that policy has to make enough money to keep you supplied with insurance as you get older and older, and to pay money out to you so your pool of money goes down every year. The chances of success on these things is minuscule. Who guarantees it? A life insurance company guarantees it as long as you have money.
Yep. It doesn't, especially in this tax environment, you as a married couple in retirement, my rule of thumb, this is not going to be exactly accurate, but my rule of thumb is you can make up to about $100,000 in income and not even get out of the 12% tax bracket.
Exactly.
That's not exact, but it's pretty close.
It's right in there.
And it's why on earth would you, if you take out $1 million out of your retirement and put it into this contract, you're gonna hit the top tax bracket.
You're in the 35% bracket before you wake up that morning.
Right.
So now you got 650.
It's a tax nightmare. Why would you do that?
Because these people aren't licensed to do the job right. They're insurance salesmen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. So when you look at these things, and our friend Stan, the annuity man, calls them the rubber chicken dinners, and these are held at really swanky restaurants, and you get to go and listen to all this stuff. What they're trying to do there is find out how much money you've got so they can sell you the biggest life insurance contract that money can buy,
mm-hmm.
after-tax money can buy. No, anybody cares to comment on that? They're free to call and tell us why I'm wrong or come into the office or whatever. But I see these things, and as I have said for 21 years on air, when you see something like this, run.
Yep.
Do not walk. Run away.
I could run the numbers on this on a 20-year payout for retirement, and I could be as conservative as possible on the growing your money in the market and as generous as possible on the life insurance side, and I will still guarantee you that it will look better on putting your money in the market.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, a quick one. We only have a few seconds before the final break. You heard anything about SBF lately?
No, not a thing.
For those of you who doesn't pop into your head right away, Sammy Bankman-Fried is in the news again. And I just can't imagine. There's a few things that they've uncovered that they're thinking maybe a little sketchy, like gifting $10 million to his father. Now his father is bankrolling his legal expenses.
Shocking.
Routing $725 million in FTX stock to company executives who didn't do anything for it. Using $546 million to buy a stake in Robinhood. The gift that keeps on taking. Oh, no, giving for me. We'll see in a couple seconds. We've got to take a quick break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
The trivia question's still out there. How much further, in a percentage-wise, would the S&P 500 have to grow in order to just match an average bull market, now that we're in a bull market? And I'm going to sweeten the pot again. Doubling up, it's over 8%.
All right.
Now, I've practically given you the answer, people. All you got to do is dial 904-222-8255, and you'll get on the air. Okay. How do I start this? How many of you know what broker check is?
I mean,
Adam knows, of course. I don't like the name of the website. Everyone has opinions about brokers, and I don't mean yacht brokers and that kind of thing, but stock brokers. But there is a database of people who are registered as financial types like us. They call it broker check. I wish they wouldn't. I wish they'd call it registered financial advisor check or something like that. But rest assured that most of us who do what we do are not brokers. We can do a lot of the things they can do, and we can't do a lot of the things that they do and shouldn't. That's the difference. Well, here we go with one of my pet peeves. People who rip off other people are the lowest of low-life scumbags, in my humble opinion. And today's topic is a fellow named Eliyahu, he goes by Eli, or Eli, whatever, Weinstein, and four of his friends have defrauded more than 150 investors out of $35 million. They were soliciting money, falsely promising to invest that money in COVID-19 masks, scarce baby formula, and first aid kits bound for Ukraine. Now, if I pitch that to someone in my office and they accepted it, I'd kick them out because they're not smart enough to be a client for us. And that's the truth. That's how I feel about these things. What's really bad about this? The worst part is that it's not his first rodeo. He was convicted in a $200 million real estate Ponzi scheme a decade ago and received 24 years in prison before his sentence was commuted. I'm not proud of this. I'm unhappy to say it. By Donald Trump. His sentence was commuted by Donald Trump, who thought he had missed enough time with his family and friends and learned enough of a lesson. And Trump was wrong about that, obviously. And I'll give him a mistake once in a while. But I also have a grievance with the people who would do business with a guy like this. The first thing you do when you're thinking of working with somebody financially, you go to brokercheck.gov, I believe it is, right?
I can check. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it is. And just type in, for instance, the last name. So if you go to BrokerCheck right now, as I did yesterday, and typed in the name Van Wee, spelled the correct way.
It's actually brokercheck.finra.org.
Okay, brokercheck.finra.org. I didn't even have to use the FINRA. It took me right there. So that's the correct way, FINRA being the financial regulator people. Anyway, I put in Van Wee, and I got two hits, and they're both in this room.
Not surprising. It's not a very common
name. Not a real common name. But Weinstein is a bit more common. But who did I not find under Weinstein? That would be Eli or Eli Weinstein, because he wasn't registered. If you are thinking of doing business with someone and you go to BrokerCheck and you can't find their name, stop thinking about it and run. Once again, there are times when you run instead of walk. Millions of dollars, $35 million from 150 people. And you know what they did with it? They lived well. That's it. I can't do this often enough to tell people to be careful. You have to know where your money is. You have to be able to see it on an independent third-party website. And you have to look at all the assets in it and know that they're the type of thing that people own or traded on the exchanges every day. You can get the value at any moment of the day. And if any of those things are not true, you have to get out of there or you're just setting yourself up for a fall. So I warn you, I hope you listen. All right. One of the things that I've been having trouble finding, when they made the budget deal not very long ago, the first thing the Republicans said they would do is prevent the hiring of all the new IRS agents. And my thought at the time was that they just were going to not give them that money that they requested. Well, they apparently did not cut off the money. The hiring maybe, although I've heard several people say lately they're doing that too. So here's a little story about how the IRS cracked down on 175 millionaire tax cheats. That doesn't sound all that bad, does it?
Nope.
It recovered $38 million from delinquency cases against wealthy taxpayers in the past few months. So I decided to check on the return on investment of our funds. They got $80 billion over 10 years, so it's $8 billion a year. This year, they've recovered $38 million, so I did a little quick math, and it's about one-half of 1% return on our investment so far. So let's say that was over a half a year, and they go a whole year. We might get a full 1% return on the money we spend to IRS. Pretty happy about that?
Sure.
Yeah. I'm not. And you know they're picking on the millionaires so they can write stories about it. It's not millionaires they're after. The biggest thing they're after now, out of the same article, is the people who have subchapter S corporations, partnerships, that kind of thing. In other words, people who work and own smaller businesses. They want to crack down on them because they're sure they're stuffing money away, and it works on two fronts. They're also trying to up the your costs for Medicare and Social Security. Now, one proposal out here by the usual group of idiots, this is the word salad of what we want out of you. It's the only thing I could think of. But there, you know that there's a cutoff point for deducting your FICA, it's 6.2% FICA withholding, which is mandatory for everybody up to, I don't know, where are we now, about 160,000 or something like that? And then it stops.
Something like that, yeah.
Medicare, on the other hand, is unlimited. So a lot of people who are successful business people and they file sub-S or small business or partnership, they take a salary and they pay their FICA on it. The partnership income, the profit, in other words, that they take out every year, is part of the business doing business. It is actually a payment to them based on the successful business they run. So it's an investment-related income. They're trying to make it all as if it's W-2 income so they can charge you on the whole thing for Social Security and Medicare. And, of course, to Medicare, because they can't up the number of dollars, they decided they'd like to get an additional 1.2% tax on that. So instead of 3.8, it would be 5%, unlimited, including your sub-S earnings.
Yeah, that it doesn't surprise me in any way.
No. It has to stop. These people have to be stopped. And all I can say is vote better than you did last time, because otherwise there's no possible chance. So just remember, we get a 1% return on our big investments, and then they want it to bleed you even more. Unbelievable. All right, let's talk a little bit about this trivia question. As Adam and I both discovered today, the average bull market is pretty profitable, so over 100%. In order to reach the average, this market has to go up another 68% on the S&P. That's the broad market. 68%.
To reach the average.
To reach the average. And to reach the average length, it would have to go on until July of 2025.
So that doesn't sound too bad. If someone told me between now and 2 years from now, the market will be up 68%, I would take
that
deal.
Where do I sign?
I will take it. And that would take the S&P to a level of 7,670.
So add this rather gigantic question mark to all the reasons that we're wondering what the heck is going on out there. And it's just one more point of mass confusion.
Mm-hmm.
How can things be so good, so bad at the same time?
I don't know. And if you ask the average person on the street, I think they would tell you the economy is struggling. And that that might stem from the fact they're paying 50% more for groceries. Really, that could be what it boils down to. But I think that's what they would tell you.
Well, I saw a bunch of them last night. They're doing a bunch of street interviews on something on Fox, and the people that they picked out, I don't know if they're the average or if they're the kind of targeted market or whatever. Bad, really bad,
terrible,
horrible,
yeah,
expensive, et cetera, were the answers I'm getting. Yet you add it all up in the aggregate and you look at everything that's going on out there and you think, it's nuts.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Does it make you want to get out of the market? It would seem like a logical conclusion, but no, not for me. I cannot see it. I'm going to stick with it for a while and see what happens, because I can't explain it otherwise.
Nope, me neither.
So I'm sorry we can't give you more definitive answers on this question that we've been struggling with for 6 months, but that's
least.
Where we
Maybe
are.
Longer than that.
Right?
Since COVID.
Anyway, it does make it kind of fun to talk about it.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, we're going to be here at the same time next week. As always, thanks for listening. Call us next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.